June 28th, 1970. One of the most important days in the history of the American homosexuals' fight for freedom.
Gay power! Gay power! Gay power! Gay power!
Thousands marched in New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles. They represented the mood of growing militancy in the United States gay community. It was actually a commemoration day as much as a civil rights demonstration, because one year before, on June 28th, 1969, thousands of homosexuals rioted in New York's Greenwich Village section. The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar, the Stonewall, on Christopher Street, in the heart of the West Village, commonly referred to as the gay ghetto of New York. By the end of the week, scores of police and rioters had been injured, many were arrested, and one man, a cab driver, was dead. Almost every homosexual who was in New York at the time of the Stonewall Rebellion has his own private memory of what took place. One of the longtime leaders of the gay rights movement, Craig Rodwell, remembers it this way.
As I was there every night, the first night was Friday. I was on the way home from a friend's house. The raid was just starting at that time, and we noticed the crowd, so we went over there. And a crowd was gathering out in front, and there was a paddy wagon pulled up and a few people being taken out. The crowd was very quiet at the time. I wasn't. I started yelling gay power and get the mafia out of the bars, and my lover nudged me and told me to shut up. But within about 15 minutes, the crowds really started doing it, going really far, much further beyond what I would have done or did. It started with a few coins and pebbles being thrown at the police, and then the police retreated into the Stonewall, and parking meters were brought out, and chants of gay power and get the mafia out of the bars. And then after the police barricaded themselves inside, it was like half an hour later, the riot police started moving up Christopher, breaking up the crowd, which had really become a very angry crowd with hundreds of bottles and rocks. There wasn't one window left in the whole place after about 10 minutes. And they broke the crowd up into small groups, and this went on for like 2 or 3 hours, back and forth in the whole area. I think they thought the people would just go home or run, especially since they were gay people. They're not used to gay people standing up at all, especially in front of police. But the people would chase the people away, and they would go around the block and come in another way. And this sort of tug of war went on all evening. There's a lot of taunts and bottle throwing and some reaction on the part of the police as well. And then on Saturday night, it was much the same thing. Starting about 9, crowds started to gather in the area, sort of small groups on the sidewalk. And then around 11 or 12, they started taking over the street and stopping cars from coming through, unless there were gay people in them. A few fires were set. But generally, it was an angry mood, a lot of chanting, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of assertion of being gay. And that, it was a way of saying we're tired of hiding, tired of leading two lives, tired of denying our basic identity, denying ourselves. A general assertion of gay people, with a newfound pride, really, a collective pride in their identity.
Did you foresee this type of thing possibly happening before it did, or did it come as a total surprise to you? I mean, this open disorder.
I've been active in the what us old-timers call the homophile movement for about 10 years now. And after plugging away all this time, it really came as a shock to me. I'd never dreamed that 2,000 gay people would really get out there and stand up like they did. It was the most exciting week in my life, really. And it was every night for a week that this went on.
Yeah, you were perhaps, were you surprised somewhat that there was this much anger in the, what should we say, the rank and file homosexual, the homosexual that's not active in the movement?
I wasn't surprised at the anger. The anger certainly has been there for a long time, but it's never, people hadn't been willing to express it before out of fear.
The Stonewall Rebellion served notice on the heterosexual majority that a growing number of gays were not afraid anymore, and were not content to continue living out their lives in fear and oppression. And if gay people were learning to overcome their fears, many straight people also learned a great deal that week. Straights came into the riot zone out of curiosity. Eyewitness and gay activist Joe Reardon says straight people learned about police attitudes toward gays.
The straight people, I think, were the ones who were most offended by this because they had never been subject to this type of police force before. You know, they had heard about it, but they never really, you know, a real police state which exists for the gay community had never penetrated into the straight world before.
The Stonewall Rebellion will be remembered as one of the major turning points in the homosexual struggle for equality. Dr. Franklin Kameny, president of the Washington, D.C. Mattachine Society, explains why.
Whatever one may think of the merits of that particular form of expression of protest or dissent, and whatever you may think of the merits of that particular demonstration, those are not that relevant. That what's important is the message which is being conveyed, and that should be made absolutely clear, and that is that we've been shoved around for 3,000 years, and we're tired of it, and we're starting to shove back, and if we don't get what's coming to us and get it promptly, there's going to be a lot more shoving back.
So in essence, you would say that the beneficial effects far outweigh the negative?
Oh, very, very much so. And I point out that it's galvanized the homosexual community in a way that very few things have. Well, anything of that sort has a variety of effects, not all of which are totally good, but in sum and all added up, there they are very much so.
Of course, conditions for gay people have not changed much for the better in the past year, and police raids such as the one that triggered the Stonewall Uprising have continued, most notably at the Snake Pit, another village bar. Bob Kohler of New York's Gay Liberation Front says he thinks a repetition of the Stonewall riots is possible.
Yeah, I think it could happen again. I mean, the people, Stonewall was a dope drop. I mean, I think people making Stonewall's become sort of a legend, and the kids have become folk heroes, which really isn't true. But something like the Snake Pit, you've got, they're tinderboxes, and I think, yeah, it could happen again. I would hope not, but I think it could.
Craig Rodwell says the most important change to come out of the riots is the changing mood of the homosexual himself.
It still is a relatively small minority of gay people who do reflect this new spirit, whatever you want to call it. But the fact that there is a minority or a group of gay people, or a large group, reflecting it is very important. And I think it's going to infect the masses of gay people in the coming years.
Another important outgrowth of the riots was the formation of numerous action-oriented homosexual groups in New York and around the country. Of course, Mattachine societies and similar groups had been around for years, but these new organizations were different. They're composed for the most part of younger and more militant homosexuals. Some of these groups formed before the rebellion, but after the Stonewall, they grew rapidly in strength and in numbers. One of the largest of the new organizations in New York is the Gay Liberation Front. Bob Kohler tells when it was founded.
June 28th, 69, the day after the riots.
Was it forming, or was there a lot of movement toward an organization like this before the Stonewall incident?
No, almost none. Mattachine had come out on the streets with an action committee during the riots, but it wasn't answering the needs of the people. And a group of people from that action committee formed GLF.
The Gay Liberation Front, or GLF as it's called, has attempted to align itself with straight people in the radical movement. While some of these attempts have been rebuffed by the heterosexuals, Kohler says some have been successful.
Yeah, I think a good example, yesterday there was a rank-and-file labor table out on the street, and these are people who are for peace in Vietnam, and they asked me to sign, contribute, and whatnot. I said I wouldn't until they included sexism as well as racism, which they have on their ballot, and they asked me to come up and talk with them about it. I think this is the kind of thing that has to be done. So we're doing it individually, basically. GLF is individuals anyway. It's not a organization.
Another young group in New York is the Gay Activists Alliance. We asked one of its leaders, Marty Robinson, what the purpose of the organization is.
GA is utilizing nonviolent militancy to secure what it wants, somewhat by hitting the system below the belt rather than just trying to cut the rug out from under the system entirely.
A third example of the new breed of gay activist groups is Homosexuals Intransigent of New York. HI's president, Joshua Harris, tells of their program.
Right now, we're changing our complete structure. Our structure was a very small, tight group of men, basically. But now we're trying to open our arms and embrace our sisters, as well as our other brothers, our older brothers, as well as the younger people in the city that have a lot to offer. And we're going to try to incorporate this in such a way so, like, our programs, especially our new programs, we're starting new programs such as HELPS, which is housing, education, law study, psychology, and basic services for the gay people, which will open up new doors to other people in this city. And will also make people that are in this city, heterosexuals, aware of our problems, aware of our needs, so they don't frown on us, so they don't have this backward look to us. This is what we're trying to do. This is what HI is about.
Most of the people in these new groups are of college age or just beyond, and many gay high school students are also beginning to become active in the fight for their rights. Joshua Harris explains why he thinks high school students can have an important role.
Because we feel that high school students right now are so full of ideals, and they can change some of the old ways of thinking, the old school of thought. And this is why we encourage high school students to join us.
Of course, New York City is not unique. New and more militant groups have sprung up all over the country. In Boston, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Detroit, and in many smaller cities. David Goldman of Chicago Gay Liberation describes that group's progress.
Well, we started originally at the University of Chicago campus in late December, and we really began to grow after January.
That's late December of 69.
Yes, that's right.
So it's a relatively new thing, but it's grown rather rapidly then.
Yes, in fact, the amount of growth we had in February and March was incredible, and specifically in terms of the number of chapters we had all over the city at other college campuses and a non-college campus on the north side of Chicago where the predominant number of homosexuals live in the city.
Of course, the Mattachine Society has been in existence for a long time, and I understand there was a chapter of one in Chicago, and neither one of them seemed to generate too much support from the community. Why would you say that your groups have gained so much support so rapidly?
Well, Chicago Gay Liberation, I think, is finally doing something in a very, very active, militant way. We're really raising consciousness of people. We're really fighting for things which people want.
Some of the new groups tend to be more radically militant than those which were formed in the 50s and early 60s. We asked Dr. Kameny what he feels about the new radicals who are impatient with the older organizations.
They have no sense of history, and they don't they are not aware of, much less appreciate, what lies behind what made possible what they're doing.
Another outgrowth of all this new activism has been the rise in the gay press. Several papers now exist in major cities across the country. One of the most successful in New York is simply called Gay, and its executive editor, Jack Nichols, describes the paper's aim.
What we intend to do with Gay, actually, is to make it, if we can, the very most informative and literate and entertaining publication that we possibly can. We want to reflect the best thinking by the best gay writers in the United States on all different kinds of topics from different points of view. And we'd like to see the words homosexual and heterosexual both fade away, because we feel that people should relate to each other as people rather than as homosexuals and heterosexuals.
One of the oldest newspapers is the Los Angeles Advocate, which has a national circulation. It probably carries more news than any other gay paper and has what might be described as a moderate editorial policy. Some radical gays in the movement have criticized it as being old time. The editor-in-chief, Dick Michaels, described the paper's editorial position this way.
The Advocate itself is opposed to violence. We are not opposed to militancy. I want to make that clear. But we are very much opposed to violence that puts us in the same category as the people who are trying to oppress us.
Politicians have generally tried to deal with the problems of all their constituents. In the past, homosexuals were the exception. Well, this situation is beginning to change with the advent of the new gay activist groups. In San Francisco for the past few years, every candidate for mayor and some of the state legislative candidates have seen fit to address the gay community specifically and ask for its support. In New York, the Gay Activist Alliance has begun to confront politicians openly on the streets.
Gay power! Gay power! Gay power! Gay power!
They attempted to ask questions of Arthur Goldberg, the Democratic candidate for governor, during a campaign stop at 86th Street and Broadway in Manhattan. When Goldberg refused to respond to the gay people's questions, they proceeded to shout him down and drive him away. The demonstrators surrounded his car and protested his silence.
Crime of silence! Crime of silence! Crime of silence! Crime of silence!
Crime of silence! Your next governor of the state of New York.
You pig! You're a pig too, mister! You're a pig too, you know it? You're a pig too! You're a fucking Nazi, baby!
There were further confrontations between the gay people and straight bystanders on the street after Goldberg had left the scene.
I was talking to Mr. Blumenthal before this happened.
I've been talking for 5 years, goddammit. I don't care how long you've been talking.
State Assemblyman Al Blumenthal stayed on the scene for over half an hour, attempting to assure gays that Goldberg was really on their side. Blumenthal promised to work for a change in New York State's discrimination law to ensure equal protection for homosexuals.
But we're not going to change society overnight, and we're not going to change the police overnight, but we are making efforts to change the law, and I think we're going to succeed.
After the incident was over, Jim Owls, president of the Gay Activist Alliance, was asked what he felt the confrontation had accomplished.
Well, I think we showed Arthur Goldberg that whenever he makes an appearance in the city, he has to be willing to speak to his homosexual constituents. He said that he didn't think it was an important enough issue, but obviously if he went into a black neighborhood, he would speak to the black problems, or he would have gotten the same reaction. So we're just going to let him know that wherever he appears, he's going to expect the same type of thing.
A few days later, at a candidates' night sponsored by the Greenwich Village Association, gay people were vocal in demanding that all candidates come out with a strong and positive statement supporting their rights. And most of them did. GAA leader Marty Robinson attacked incumbent Congressman Leonard Farbstein for not representing the gay community in his own district.
I spoke to Congressman Farbstein at a private fundraising gathering with three other members of Gay Activists Alliance. First, he gave us his liberal credentials. He sent $10 to a needy black in Arkansas who needed shoes. He's really with the problems of the nation. And then I asked him about homosexuals being fired in Wall Street because they cannot get bonds because bonding companies in the state of New York will not give a bond to a known homosexual. And Congressman Farbstein has done nothing, spoken out, not at all of the subject, and at this moment, hundreds of gays have lost their jobs. I accuse the congressman of negligence of office, and I think any homosexual who votes for the congressman is out of his head.
Congressman Farbstein was defeated in the Democratic primary by Mrs. Bella Abzug, who had spoken before a meeting of the GAA and openly requested the support of homosexuals. One of the events during Gay Pride Week, which preceded the mass march, was a picketing demonstration in front of the New York Republican State Committee. While the pickets chanted on the sidewalk, several members of the GAA were staging a sit-in demonstration in the offices upstairs. One of the members of the sit-in contingent, Arthur Evans, came downstairs at one point to explain that the demonstrators had met with a representative of the committee who had refused to give them an appointment with Governor Rockefeller or any other high official.
The only thing he said he would do is pass on, pass the buck. We have approached the Republican State Committee because the governor has made himself inaccessible to the people of the state of New York. We spoke to a man who categorically refused even to set up an appointment for us with an important official of the Republican State Committee or with the governor. The only thing he said he could do was to pass the buck. Pass the buck. That's all homosexuals have been getting in this state since this state has been founding. Nobody represents homosexuals. All they do is pass the buck. We are going to sit in until somebody of importance comes to talk to us about our demands. And if they don't come to talk to us, they're going to have to send the cops in to drag us out. Because gay power is here to stay, and nobody, nobody is going to ignore us any longer.
The demonstrators were finally arrested that night, and when they were released from jail on bond, a large crowd of gay people was waiting outside the courthouse to cheer them on. Marty Robinson was asked what purpose all of this political confrontation serves.
So far, we've zapped enough important political people that we're getting a fair employment law introduced by Minority Leader of the City Council, Eldon Klingon, to the Council in the next week. We have commitments from Mayor Lindsay that he'll give us public backing as soon as the law is in the Council.
In connection with that fair employment law, you had quite a demonstration during a meeting of the Village Independent Democrats, as I recall. Could you tell us what happened there?
Well, we met a little resistance from Councilwoman Greitzer in asking her to place law before the city council. And having refused the petition to that of asking her to do that, we confronted Mrs. Greitzer at a meeting of the Village Independent Democrats, took over the meeting, raucously demanded that she repent, as it were, and change her tune, which she did publicly, and said with several other politicos present who took up the banner immediately and decided to introduce two bills. One is a fair housing law by Carter Burton, and the other one is a fair employment law, an anti-closet law, being introduced by the minority leader, Eldon Klinger.
Are you optimistic about both of these laws, particularly the fair employment law?
We have a fighting chance. We're going to hold, public hearings going to be held during the summer, and we tend to find out who our opposition is then. And then, rather than just say, we're sorry that you don't agree with us, I think we're going to get back at everybody who testifies against us.
In Los Angeles, the advocate has been involved in politics for quite some time. Editor Dick Michaels describes the outcome of one particularly important contest.
A year ago, we were useful in a city council election. A city councilman from Hollywood, Paul Lamport, was up for re-election, and he was very bad on gays. So in the primary, we backed an openly gay candidate who did not have much of a chance of getting the nomination, but we wanted to see how many votes he would get. So he wound up getting over 3,000 votes, I believe. Then in the actual election, Lamport ran against a man named Stevenson, and we came out openly against Lamport and backed Stevenson, even though we didn't know a heck of a lot about him, but we knew Lamport was bad. Well, Lamport lost by roughly 3,000 votes.
In Chicago, political influence for the gay community has so far been hard to obtain. David Goldman of Chicago Gay Liberation explains.
It's very difficult working with the machine. Mayor Daley is generally opposed to liberation of gay people. He's very, very uptight about gay scenes in general. We do have some support from the anti-machine aldermen in Chicago.
The idea of the mass march and Gay Pride Week was conceived by Craig Rodwell and some of his friends late in 1969.
It was one night back in October, I believe. Linda Rhodes, Ellen Broidy, Fred Sargent, and myself sat here and worked the whole thing out. I mean, the basic idea. And we presented it to the Eastern Regional Conference of Homophile Organizations in Philadelphia in November.
In New York, Gay Pride Week got off to an early start. On Friday, June 19th, a dance was held in Earl Hall at Columbia University. The dance was sponsored by the group known as the Gay People at Columbia, which is an outgrowth of the old Student Homophile League. One of the leaders of the GPC, Nino Romano, described its function.
We also want to give the homosexual an alternative to, I think, what is a very depressing situation, that is the bar scene and the bath scene, which are good, but they sort of just emphasize sex and the body, as opposed to the whole person. And we'd like to see people, gays relating as people, rather than just gays relating as sex objects.
Romano went on to say that there might be demonstrations by the Columbia group if the members feel protests are necessary.
I'd like to see this group develop according to the people who are in it. So therefore, if there are people who join GPC who are interested in political action or who feel that there are discriminations on campus and that they'd like to act against them, then fine.
On Monday of Gay Pride Week, the New York Mattachine Society held a legal clinic. In the evening, Frank Thompson, owner of the Thompson Art Gallery in the Village, opened his shop for a week-long exhibition of gay art and sculpture. Mr. Thompson was asked about response to the exhibit.
Yes, we've had pretty good crowds. Yesterday we had people from Australia and Texas and all over.
On Tuesday, there was an all-day benefit at the Oscar Wilde bookstore to raise money for the Christopher Street Liberation Day Committee. The owner of the well-known store is Craig Rodwell, who says that thousands of gay people have visited his shop over the past few years. Also on Tuesday, a special movie showing was held by the GAA, again to raise money for the committee. Wednesday brought the sit-in and demonstration at the New York Republican State Headquarters. Later that day, there was a workshop for gay artists. One of the participants in the event, Pat Maxwell, describes the purpose of it.
A group of us who originated from the Gay Liberation Front artists have been getting together for the last two or three weeks just to see what we could do for ourselves as artists and relate to the movement as artists, because we're in a position of kind of weakness in the political movement, because right now other people's problems seem to be more immediate than ours, and so we're just beginning to get together and see what we can do and what we can do with gay art in terms of get it together as a livelihood for ourselves and to get it out to everybody in the public so that we can express the gay feeling or whatever we want to express as gay people.
What type of problems would you say that gay artists particularly have as opposed to the straight artists?
Oh, well, a lot of the problems are similar. The isolation. I think there's more isolation with a gay artist. And a lot of gay artists feel in their art, I think, that they can't come out straight with whatever they feel. So this causes problems, and I think it means there is a need for a community of artists so that we can support each other.
On Thursday, Homosexuals Intransigent sponsored a special legal workshop to better inform homosexuals of what legal avenues are currently available to protect their rights. There was also a confrontation later Thursday night when a dispute developed over the showing of a film. A movie theater had been reserved by Gay Power newspaper for a benefit, but due to a scheduling mix-up, members of a so-called radical group, the Vince Ramos Brigade, felt that the theater was reserved for their benefit that night. Several gay people arrived and attempted to engage in a dialogue with the Vince Ramos group, which sends people to Cuba. Mike Brown of GLF says the homosexuals attempted to explain the gay community's position.
The Vince Ramos people were of the opinion that it was a revolutionary thing to raise money to send people from the ghettos to Cuba, where gay liberation people pointed out that the oppression in their home, in their own district, in their own city, was very real for gay people, and that we had a right to attempt to deal with our oppression by having a successful weekend, which involved raising money for the committee for the activities of the week.
This encounter was an illustration of some of the problems that GLF has met in its effort to ally with straight radicals. Brenda of GLF gives her opinion on the problem of gaining support from some straights in the radical movement.
What I think it is that they're very happy in their white male supremacy. They have guilt because they recognize that they're racist and because they're willing to continue to be racist. And the way that they deal with being sexist is that they just pretend that we don't exist.
On Friday of Gay Pride Week, the Gay Liberation Front opened its headquarters in the Washington Square Church. The group provided free food, literature tables, and a place for out-of-town gay people to meet and talk. Meanwhile, the GLF was holding an extensive series of workshops at Alternate University, a radical school which GLF has worked with closely. One of the workshops involved sexism in the gay person and was led by members of the GLF's Red Butterfly cell. Bill Sullivan of Red Butterfly explained his group's purpose.
Well, the Red Butterfly cell is a group of people who are in fact, in entirety, would consider themselves revolutionary socialists of one sort or another. That doesn't imply necessarily a complete agreement on all matters of policy and so on. But our main function, at least as we see it, is an educational function. What we want to do is to try to work with all other tendencies within the gay movement to try to develop an analysis of gay liberation, which seems to actually fit the situation. And hopefully out of that, begin to develop a notion of where gay liberation ought to go, and from there develop concrete strategy and tactics.
When you say educational, do you mean educating the gay community or educating the straight community, basically?
Well, our main thrust has to be toward the gay community at this point. And we see our job as really going in two directions there, too. One part to the gay community, which is recognizable in some sense as gay, the so-called gay ghetto, but also, equally important, directing ourselves to gay people who have worked in the radical movement for many years, but usually anonymously and very much under the cover, and attempting to get them to come out so as to involve the radical movement as a whole in the process of gay liberation.
Saturday morning brought a day-long conference of Eastern regional homophile organizations. Representatives of most of the major homosexual organizations on the East Coast participated in discussions of past projects and future goals. On Saturday afternoon, a group of straight high school students visited the GLF headquarters in the village. Bob Kohler tells what happened.
Well, these are kids that the church brings in. They bring them in for weekends. They put them up here at the church, and then they sort of send them out on a radicalization program, a very mild radicalization program. And they had originally asked if I would go upstairs and talk with them, because I've talked to groups from time to time here at the church. I felt it would be better if they came down here. They could get other people's points of views. And I think it was probably one of the best we've had. Evidence of that was about 20 of the kids stayed on and just got into little groups with men and women, homosexual men and women, and talked with them. The kids were very interested. I know one girl said to me she had never met a homosexual before. She'd seen one wearing a dress once in L.A., and she was scared. When they told her they were coming in, she didn't want to come in, and she said she grabbed her boyfriend when she came in, and he grabbed her, and they both didn't want to, but they both went out feeling they should have come sooner.
On Saturday also, Chicago gay people were holding their demonstration. Mike Barta of Chicago Gay Liberation welcomed the crowd this way.
I want to welcome everybody here on behalf of Chicago Gay Liberation on this celebration day, part of Gay Pride Week. We're here because we're gay and we're proud that we are.
Henry Weinhoff, another gay liberation leader in Chicago, had this observation.
Like, we're told we're supposed to live lives that are honest and that are free. But the more we try and live lives that are honest and free, the more we get fucked over. But we're not going to accept anymore. And if the shit hits us because we're not going to accept it anymore, that's okay, because we've taken the shit all of our lives anyway. And we can deal with it in an overt form as well as the kind of covert form we've had to take it. And I think we're the better for it.
In Chicago, as across the country, the gay movement has brought out many people who are new to marches and demonstrations. One of them put it this way.
I've never gone on a march before, and I'll be damned if I've ever been in a movement before. But all of a sudden, something that touched the corner of my life and its inner core began to have some kind of meaning. And I had to say that I've got to be out here no matter what.
Before the Chicago march began to move from a North Side park and down Michigan Avenue, Mike Barta reminded the crowd that all gay people must unite if freedom is ever to be attained.
If you don't think every guy that's picked up in a tea room isn't you, you're out of your mind.
Right on.
And if you don't think that every guy that gets busted in this park, that's gotten murdered and pigs being picked up in this park, getting robbed in this park, you're out of your mind. And all I got to say about this park is let's get the hell out of here and let's stop being those fucking kind of homosexuals who are hiding and let's get on to Michigan Avenue.
When the Chicago marchers reached their destination at the downtown Civic Center, there were more speeches. Bill Try said gays could be in the vanguard of those working to change American society.
Today is a really great day. I'm really proud to be gay.
Right on.
And I also consider myself very lucky to be gay.
Because we don't
have to listen to all the rhetoric that explains what's wrong with this sexist, racist society. We know.
Right on.
Because we're gay, we can be the leaders in the revolution that is going to make this society a better place to live. Gay power.
Since Illinois is one of the few states with no laws against homosexual conduct, some may wonder why gay people are so oppressed in the city of Chicago. David Goldman gave his observations on this.
Yes, I think this is basically true to the very hostile attitude of the police. And if most people remember how the people were treated at the Chicago Convention inside as well as outside, you can get sort of an idea to a mild extent how gay people are treated. Just imagine that treatment, only much more worse and on a continual basis. Laws really don't have much effect because the police use other harassment techniques.
In Los Angeles, gay people were staging their demonstration on Sunday. Rob Cole, news editor of the Los Angeles Advocate, reports on that event.
Press for 8 blocks down Hollywood Boulevard from the street called McCadden Place to E-Bar, which is just west of Vine Street.
How long a distance is that, approximately?
That's about a mile. Mm-hmm. There were altogether about 30 vehicles involved in it, including five that could be classified as floats. Most of the cars were decorated in one way or another. The floats, the main one was a GLF float, which had a large cross mounted on it and a man apparently nailed to the cross. The truck had a sign on the back in memory of those killed by the pigs. In memory of the signs stuck around on the truck that says, "We remember Tinkerbell." This is the most elaborate float. The total number of people in the parade, according to the official parade count, was 1,169. This was taken with a mechanical counter. The police estimates varied somewhat. The Hollywood Division watch officer after the parade told me at first that he thought there were about 1,000 participants, and then he said that an observer in a helicopter, which they kept overhead all the time during the parade, estimated 1,500 in the parade. I would say probably somewhere in between those two figures is correct.
The mood of the crowd in Los Angeles was a mixture of joy, militancy, and some sorrow as past injustices against the homosexual community were recalled. As the preparations for the New York March continued, thousands of gay people from out of town began to pour into the city. We asked John Gillespie of the Philadelphia GLF how many people might be coming from Philadelphia.
I'll be marching with the Philadelphia Gay Liberation Front under that banner. And depending on how many people we can recruit from the sidelines or bylines or highways or wherever, I would hope that there's a good representation from Philadelphia, and that perhaps someday in the not-too-distant future we might see the same type of activity in Philadelphia.
On Sunday morning, the parade committee held martial training at Alternate University. Various techniques of crowd control were described and acted out for the prospective marshals. Several out-of-towners had volunteered to be marshals during the march. One, a young man from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, was asked what conditions are for Harrisburg gays.
It's pretty poor, as a matter of fact. First, they've had some bad incidents in the past, several years ago, and of course, that has left a bad taste in people's mouths, and I guess maybe rightfully so, and so now they... It's a town which is very closely watched by the police and local authorities, and so you don't have a good situation there in which to produce change or growth.
A few hours after martial training, people began to gather in the parade assembly area on West Washington Place, just a few blocks away from Christopher Street, where angry mobs of gay people had rioted just 1 year before. The mood today was different. The sun was shining, people were laughing, meeting old friends and making new ones. The straight press was there, with most of the reporters and many perplexed straights trying to make some sense out of what was going on. But for the most part, they were ignored, as the gay marchers were caught up in their newfound spirit of pride and assertion. It was a time, a place, and an atmosphere for homosexuals to be together as one united group as they had never been before. Thousands of gay brothers and sisters were holding hands, chanting, singing, and expressing their love for one another. They were asserting the common bond which holds all homosexuals in America together, a bond which few heterosexuals could ever understand. Dr. Kameny said that it was a beautiful day which would serve a tremendous purpose.
I think that it's vitally necessary to create a sense of community spirit in the homosexual community. We have the same kind of problems that many other minorities do, who have been placed, who have always been placed in second-class status, in that the attitudes tend to seep into the individual's own self-image. And therefore, it's critically important that we do things to create just exactly what this is called, Gay Pride Week, that sort of thing, to create in the individual a sense of restored self-image, self-esteem, self-confidence.
Kameny went on to recall the first gay demonstration in the United States.
5 years ago, almost exactly, we had the first public picketing demonstration by homosexuals. 10 frightened people in front of the White House. We expected to have stones thrown at us. And this is the way it's developed in 5 years, and I couldn't be more delighted.
A man who had traveled from Norfolk, Virginia, said that this day was a great benefit for the millions of gay people who did not yet have the courage to march.
Knowing we're around and this is going on, I think it will increase their sense of gay pride. I think it's probably the worst thing we've had is this business of sneaking around and hiding from people. Perhaps if we hadn't been hiding all along, you know, the repression wouldn't have been as bad. I'm sure that's one reason why straight people can't feel they trust us. They get the feeling that we're sneaking around doing sneaky things when really we're doing the same thing everyone else is doing, which is relating as human beings when we want to.
A woman from the Homophile Action League in Philadelphia described an extremely successful forum that they had during the week. The subject was the homosexual and politics.
We focused on political possibilities that people could choose within the movement, liberal, radical, conservative, and so on. And we focused especially on political actions that could be chosen, from tame things like letter writing to radical confrontation tactics. Very successful. One decision was made to make up thousands of stickers which would say the person standing next to you might be a homosexual. Why isn't he free? We're going to make these up and plaster them all over subways, buses, taxicabs, streets. You name it.
A man who represented a group from Riverdale, Maryland, told of their activities.
Ours is the Homophile Social League. We're primarily a group stressing social activities. We're also educationally inclined. We try to put up lectures and programs, both in the community and for our group itself.
A man who was carrying a sign for the Philadelphia Gay Liberation Front described his group's work.
GLF is an action-oriented group, and we've had, in our first month of activity, a number of actions. We've appeared at Beans under our banner. We have a project going for Harmonyville Music Festival where we're attempting to develop an experimental gay community.
A group of people had come from the Lehigh Valley region of Pennsylvania representing their organization Lehigh Ho. One youth talked about their pursuits.
We have about 45 members now. We participated in the Mattachine Society Convention. We received great support from them. We're very grateful to them. We're starting homophile movements within the colleges of our area. We've already formed one at Kutztown State, Kutztown, Pennsylvania.
Not everyone who came to the march was involved in formal organizations. Thousands were simply average gay people who felt that this day was a very important event in their personal lives, as well as a great step forward for the homosexual community. One kid, Jimmy Getz from Washington, D.C., put it this way.
I thought I would try to put my part in it since I believe in this. I believe that there's so much going on with racial problems. Everybody is trying to fight for the top goal, so I believe we should try to fight for our goal.
As the crowd began to build in the assembly area, Kay Tobin, a reporter for the newspaper Gay, was asked how she felt.
Looks very good. It's very dispersed right now, but I think when it's all pulled together, it'll be very, very strong, very good. And we still have an hour to go, after all.
What about the turnout of women so far? Does it look pretty good?
Yeah, I think it's very good. Yeah, very good.
Exactly 1 hour later, the march began to move. Out of West Washington Place, onto the Avenue of the Americas, or 6th Avenue, as native New Yorkers refer to it. For the most part, the demonstrators were cheered as they walked through the village. As the marchers passed the Women's House of Detention at Greenwich and 6th Avenues, a chant of "Free Our Sisters, Free Ourselves" welled up.
Free our sisters, free ourselves! Free our sisters, free ourselves!
The march, which had grown 15 blocks long, moved toward 14th Street, past Alternate University. The clenched fist salute was raised to the windows of the school, and the streets inside the building returned the greeting.
2, 4, 6, 8, Gays Unite this Master State!
The march continued north, past 42nd Street, which for years has been one of the most repressive and degrading streets in the U.S. homosexual experience.
2, 4, 6, 8, gay is just as good as straight. 2, 4, 6, 8, gay is just as good as straight. It's not better.
Hundreds of different signs were carried aloft during the march. Some just gave the names of the cities which the demonstrators had come from. Others had the names of organizations, and some had slogans such as "Gay Power," "This is our country too," "We are the people our parents warned us against," or simply "Gay Pride." As the marchers wended their way through Central Park toward Sheep Meadow, the old civil rights song, "We Shall Overcome," was heard. As the demonstrators arrived in Sheep Meadow, spontaneous applause and cheering erupted as the group at the front of the march stopped, turned around and saw the streaming masses crowding up behind them, further than the eye could see. Thousands upon thousands of gay people poured into Sheep Meadow from the march route. The feeling was pervasive. It seemed as if everyone there knew that something of major importance had just happened to them, that there could be no turning back to the old days of hiding, degradation, and denial of their basic humanity.
Well, this is tremendous. It's really great.
There's been nothing like this before, and I hope it sets a tone and a trend for the whole future.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's just absolutely incredible. I don't think the impact will mean anything to me until 2 days later.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I feel better.
Brothers and sisters, man, this is really where it's at.
It was so beautiful. I was in the middle of the march. I couldn't see the front because it was too far ahead of me, and I couldn't see the back. I couldn't believe it. It was just fantastic. It was beautiful. Beautiful. I'm just the happiest day so far of my life.
That's what we needed for a long time.
It's marvelous. Fantastic. Really is. I feel very liberated because of this. There must be 15, 20,000 people here today.
Nobody expected it to turn out like this. This is the best thing that's happened to the gay movement.
There were many people in Sheep Meadow that day. And as the straight world is learning, they were as varied as any other large group of people. There were rich and there were poor, militant and reserved, young and old. Some had waited many years for this day. Jack Nichols tells of one.
There were some very old people there, like Prescott Townsend was there from Boston. He's a very elderly gentleman, almost 80 years old. He'd come down to march the whole march all the way up. And he has a bad hip, too. I happen to know that. He was one of the first people in this country to start with homosexual civil liberties, once chained himself to the Massachusetts state legislature. And old Prescott was there carrying a sign that said, Gay Pride.
Nichols went on to give his personal reaction to this day.
We stood at the top of the hill in Sheep's Meadow and watched thousands upon thousands of people come up the hillside. And it was really quite a sight. I'm not really a very emotional person in some ways, but my eyes filled up with tears while I watched all of these people cheering, very happy, healthy-looking crowds. It was a great experience.
It's been said that homosexuals will never win respect and acceptance from straight people until they respect and accept themselves. This they're beginning to do. The road to freedom is always a long and painful one, but on June 28th of 1970, the American homosexual took the most important step toward his freedom, the liberation of his own mind. As one participant said to me, a new spirit of regained humanity is awakening in homosexuals all over the world, and it won't stop until all of us, all of the millions of gay people, can stand in the sun and be free, as we were for a few hours today.